Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio, hosted by serial entrepreneur Denise Griffiths. Denise offers a full menu of on-the-web services for all your online needs. Denise and her team of virtual assistants can help manage your online business, including social media channels, blogs, web portals, and more. YourOfficeOnTheWeb.com is a comprehensive resource to help you combine the power of your brand, your connections, and innovative ideas to develop a full online strategy that can guarantee a strong profitable impact on your business.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio. I am really excited. Today I get to bring back, she's a friend of mine, she's a tremendously gifted entrepreneur, and this is the second part of a very important interview that we did not too long ago. And I'm welcoming back to the show the fulfiller of publishing dreams, Stacy Aronson. You can hear our other interview on Blog Talk Radio or on iTunes. I will also post a link to it in the chat room. But just a kind of recap, Stacy is a professional book doctor. I love that title. We talked about that in our last show. Excuse me. Who takes self-publishing authors by the hand and transforms their manuscripts into the book that they've dreamed of. Not the one that they're just going to kind of slap up and hope for the best, but the book that they've really dreamed of. The one that truly represents who they are, what their message is, and what they're sharing with their audience. And she takes them from impeccable editing and proofreading to engaging audience-targeted covers and professional interior design, the spine design, something we also talked about in our first interview. And she really literally rivals or exceeds a traditional house publication. Excuse me, I've got the coughs today. She has been a trusted book production. Blah, blah, blah. I need coffee, production partner for some of the most accomplished coaches, educators, entrepreneurs, and writers of inspirational nonfiction memoirs. And she works with a couple of my clients, so I can really attest to what I'm saying here. I'm not just saying this, I have seen it. She also assists nonfiction writers with developing their ideas into a sound book structure with clear goals. And this is something you really need to pay attention if you aspire to write any kind of a book. She also writes a monthly newsletter for writers and is the author of the blog, The Self-Publishing Scoop, where she dispenses regular guidance on all aspects of independent publishing. Head on over to her website. It's listed in the show prep. You can read it there, and she'll tell you how to find her, too. But get on over there and get on that newsletter list. Stacy, welcome back to Your Partner in Success Radio. I'm so excited to have this second talk with you.
Oh, my goodness. Thank you for the lovely introduction. I am thrilled to be back with you today as well.
Well, we had such a great time the last time you were here, and you gave our audience a tremendous amount of information. Book publishing is scary. Look, I am an expert at a lot of things, and I look at book publishing and just I cry. I just head for the corner. It's not something I'm willing to take on because there are so many moving parts.
Yes, and I know last time we spoke, we talked about how many very intelligent people, many of my clients have PhDs and MBAs and are very successful entrepreneurs, and they feel the same way. So it's not anything to feel ashamed of if you're overwhelmed by self-publishing. It just is what it is.
Well, to be honest with you, I kind of was because I'm one of those A-type personalities that says, I can do anything, put my hands on my hips and dive in. I look at book publishing and I walk away going, no, 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 no. I will find an expert. No. So that's why I'm so glad to be able to chat with you. But listen, before we get started, tell our audience if they're just listening to this interview and not our first one, and I hope they will go back and listen to that, but tell our audience a bit about yourself and where they can find you.
Sure. Well, again, as you did last time, you did such a lovely job introducing me, and I thank you so much. But yes, I am pretty unique in the self-publishing world because I actually am a professional editor as well as a professional book designer, and I've become a self-publishing expert. So most people in the industry are one or the other, but not all of them. So I'm actually able to take authors by the hand with a raw manuscript or even a manuscript in progress that needs some coaching and walk them all the way through the entire book production and publishing process until they have a beautiful book in their hands that does rival a traditional house. So I am at thebookdoctorisin.com. My company is called The Book Doctor Is In, and as you mentioned on my website, I have a lot of information. I also have a questionnaire. If you happen to be someone who's interested in finding out more, you're welcome to fill out the questionnaire, no obligation. But I do have a lot of information about the process and the different phases of book production, and so I'm here to help, basically, as much as I possibly can. I'm here to take away the burden of the overwhelm and help people get through the process in the best possible way and have the most excellent book as a result.
And one of the things that we did not mention, or I don't think we mentioned in either episode, is that you're also able to work with authors who are writing very technical books. Because I know one of the books that you wrote on, that you worked on, was for one of my clients. It's got graphs and charts. It's a very technical. And you did a gorgeous job on that.
Oh, thank you. Well, yes, I do a lot of nonfiction, and, you know, some of the books I've done do have a lot of what I call bells and whistles going on, so a lot of graphics and tables and charts and, you know, little call-out boxes and fun ways to engage the reader, and that's really a specialty of mine, because I know when you open up a big book, the last thing you want, and it depends on the book, but there are books that just really beg for interest to the eye going on, whether it's bullet points or a shaded box or a little helpful tip or whatever it might be when you're dealing with nonfiction. And so it's important to me to approach any project like that to make sure that there's something of interest on every possible page. So not that it's overdone graphically and it's you know, hard to follow in any way, but just that anything that needs to be emphasized or that you would want the reader to specifically remember moving forward in the chapter or things like that, that there is, you know, either a fun emphasis, if that is the tone of the book, or there's the appropriate emphasis that works so that it, certain points will stand out well and help the reader actually have a really engaging experience with the book as opposed to just pages and pages of continuous paragraph text.
Right, especially when you're attempting to learn something. And there is a psychology to the bullets and the colors and the call-out boxes and graphics, and there's very definitely a psychology to it. And I believe you really do understand that. Is there any, have you done any preparation, or is this just something that is instinctual to you?
You know, to be honest, a lot of it really is instinct for me. I think having been a voracious reader all of my life, I have such a connection to books, and somehow it was just, I just think of it as a God gift, to be honest, that I have that when I'm dealing with books, that certain things as I'm reading, for example, if I'm working on a manuscript and I'm reading and there are a series of things in the paragraph, I think, well, if I pull those out in bullet points, they're going to make much more of an impact on the reader. They'll be more memorable. If they want to flip back to the page, they'll be so much easier to find. You know, so I think for me, it really is a lot of instinct. And I think for book designers in general, I think a lot of it is sort of a gift and an instinct. I mean, there are many conventions we follow in professional book design. There are many rules. There are certain things you do and you don't do. But then beyond that, there's the whole creative side where you're really creating a text that works well for a reader. And, you know, that's all about the spacing between the lines and the size of the font and, as you were saying, all of the little technical and graphical elements that are happening in the book that really make a difference. And if you make bad decisions on those things, it can ruin the entire experience for a reader. So I think for me, as I'm working on a concept, for example, for a chapter for an author, I always print it out and I look at it and I think, okay, for the size of the book, does this font work? Does it feel like the right reflection of the material? Is the line spacing right? You know, all those little technical things. And then once it feels really good, that's when I send it to the author for approval. But it's definitely a process, and it's a very thoughtful process, but a lot of it is in.
Well, you're right. I mean, I'm agreeing with you totally because I have the same approach to web development. Yeah, a lot of it is pure instinct. A lot of it is logical and linear. Some of it is just pure science. And some of it is creativity. So it's this kind of mix but you have to be able to pull it out and put it down on paper or on a website or in a book cover or wherever it's going to be, so it reads well, it flows well, and people aren't going, ow. You don't want them to be, it happens. I've seen it in books and I've seen it on websites where you just, I saw it this morning, you know, I was going along in this book, it was a great book, and then I hit a bad sentence. And it was a really bad sentence. I had to stop 3 or 4 times and go back to it. It was like having a seed under your tongue or something. It's like, oh, it was just bothering me. It's like, oh, gosh, didn't anybody edit this? That's terrible. And the more I read it, the less sense it made to me.
Mm.
So, you know, these are things that we all have to think of as creatives and as, you know, people who are getting your work out to the world. We have to present it in logical, linear, flowing patterns, but patterns that are beautiful.
Absolutely, and you know this so well, being a web developer, that first impression, I mean, people can leave a website in a millisecond if it doesn't appeal to them. And no, we can't appeal to every single visitor with, you know, the color scheme or the layout necessarily, but in general, you don't want to break certain rules. And there are a lot of rules that self-publishing authors break when they try to do their books themselves. And so that is a huge reason why I try to dispense as much helpful knowledge as I possibly can, and also why I built my business so that I could offer myself as a trusted partner to authors who are a good match for me and with whom I feel I can really develop the very best book based on their genre and my knowledge and experience. So you're absolutely right.
Right, and you took your wisdom and your passion, and then you turned that into what I can only describe as an entrepreneurial fever, and good for you.
Oh, thank you. I'm very, very grateful that it has all come together the way it has with all my skills and passions in one place, and that I really can be a true trusted partner for people who want to publish a book and realize that dream of being a published author with excellence. So, yes,
I know.
Thank you.
Listen, I've been watching you, I see your work, and I'm not one for blowing smoke, so I'm telling the truth on this one. Listen, before we get too far in, because I have a ton of questions for you, can you give a recap quickly about what we talked about in our last interview?
Sure. Well, one of the things we touched on was that writers are not supposed to be editors, designers, or publishing experts. That is not an expectation of a writer. So to remember that you need to hire professionals for those elements of your book production and really just allow yourself to focus on building a platform and on the marketing of your book and on the writing, if you're still working on the writing, because those are the things that you really need to stay focused on as in your expertise. And we talked about an author platform being about establishing yourself as a resource, as a connection to your target audience, where you're offering beneficial information that will help them. It's not about selling. As you said so beautifully, that when you become a resource and people go to you and they subscribe to your blog or your newsletter or your podcast or whatever it is, over time they learn to like and trust you. And then if you do have a book come out, you've already established that wonderful relationship with them, and it's much more likely that they're going to buy a book. They're certainly not going to buy your book if you're just tweeting and Facebooking, you know, buy my book, my book's on sale, my book's available here. So we did touch on what an author platform is about. It's really about building that relationship and being a resource. We also talked about something really important, which is not falling for the packages and the courting tactics from self-publishing companies such as Author House, Author Solutions, iUniverse, Balboa Press, and the list goes on, because they are really only a money-making model. They are not interested in producing books of excellence that will take any manuscript. They do not coach you into the best, you know, structure of your book. Their editors many times are sourced overseas. They are people who don't even speak English as a native language, and yet they are editing your book. They do not have the same design sense necessarily or even trained as designers. It's crazy, and there are lawsuits pouring out of these companies. There are horror stories pouring out of these companies. They're saying that you need, you know, thousands of dollars in marketing and all of these things that are never, ever coming to fruition. So they're really about a money-making model. The sad thing is many of them are under the umbrella of very reputable houses like Random House, Penguin, and Hay House. Unfortunately, their connection with them is not really such a great thing for these big publishing houses, except for the fact that they're funneling some money into themselves from these so-called self-publishing wings. So this is something I want everyone to steer clear of, and I was really glad that I got to talk about that because they spend a lot of money courting writers who are looking for a full package solution. And it's very easy to fall into that because, as you say, it's a very overwhelming place to be. You don't want to learn all these moving parts. And so if somebody comes along or you see an ad, you know, you're shopping online and a little paid ad comes up on the side and oh, that sounds really good. It's just unfortunate that a lot of people are falling into it and thinking it's a good thing when really it doesn't turn out to be such a good thing at all. There are lots of statistics about the percentage of books that actually sell any copies or actually are decent. So that's something that
I did want to share. And when we talked about this on our last show, when you mentioned Hay House, my stomach kind of fell because I love Hay House.
I get a lot of my
reading material comes from them, and I just went, oh. But my question is, and then we'll go back to the recap if you don't mind, but my question is, and I know you have statistics, but I guess I want people to be aware of what could happen to them if they kind of fall into this, you know, it's one size fits all, it's all done for you. Do they wind up with boxes of books in the garage? What happens?
Well,
I mean, do they have to buy a ton of books, or they print on demand, or, you know, what are some of the horror stories?
Well, it depends on the company. Some companies are requiring that you buy so many copies, and that is really reflective of the old vanity press model. And back in the day, when you said self-publishing, it meant vanity publishing, and that's pretty much been looked down on for all time. You know, it's like, okay, nobody wants to publish your book, so you're going to publish it yourself. And in those situations, yes, you know, the publisher would say, well, fine, you know, you pay us to do all this work, and then you have to buy 5,000 copies or some, you know, at one time it was 10,000 copies and things like that. So, yes, there were authors who produced a book this way 20 years ago who still have books rotting in their garage that they could never sell. So sometimes that is the model. And any time a company says you need to buy this many books, definitely steer clear of that because the new self-publishing model with print-on-demand is great. It really is because it takes away from having to invest in all that inventory. And the other thing that happens, and this happens all the time, I mean, I just published my 22nd book this week, and this has happened with every book I've done. No matter how great, you know, how attentive you are to the editing, the proofreading, and every little aspect, we are all human. And sometimes the author, which just happened to me, an author emailed me and said, oh, my gosh, I spelled one of my references wrong, references' names incorrectly.
Uh-oh.
Just the first name. I put, you know, this letter instead of this letter in the name. And what do I do? You know, the book's been published. Well,
right.
If you have 10,000 copies in your garage and that's the only book you've got, you can't just go into the file and make a correction and have them reprinted, obviously. But with print-on-demand, the nice thing is if, you know, you do happen to find a mistake or a reader finds a typo that everybody, all the professionals have missed, because, again, we are human. As much as I try to be a perfectionist, and I am a perfectionist, sometimes I overlook things. I just said, don't worry, I got you covered. I went into all the different files, the ebook files, the print book files. I made the correction, and I re-uploaded the files to all of the platforms. So they came off sale for, you know, a day. Not available, not temporary, unavailable. And then, you know, they go through review, and they come back up, and they're for sale again, and nobody's the wiser. So that's a really nice thing about print-on-demand, and that's why I do really like it. Now, the quality is really pretty good. It's maybe not quite as good as when there's a huge offset print run of a book where you have total consistency with color and all of that. When it's print on demand, there's a little shift in maybe the color of the cover design. And sometimes that shift is more than the author would like, and you don't always know what the customer is going to get. But I would say that if you are, you know, thinking of self-publishing, print on demand is definitely a great way to go, and it also gives you a lot of great options as an author. But back to your question about what are the, you know, the horrific things that can happen. One example is there was an author who published with one of the aforementioned self-publishing, in quotes, companies, and this company pushed and pushed and pushed a $10,000 ticket to this writer's event that they absolutely needed to be at this book expo in order for, you know, this exclusive party, because everyone who was anyone in the industry would be there. And this person thought, oh, my gosh, this is my big chance. Well, nothing happened from that party, absolutely nothing, because nothing in publishing is a guarantee. It's kind of like becoming an actor and saying, well, you know, I'm sure that I'm going to be a movie star. It just, there's no guarantee, even if you're a fabulous, fabulous, talented person. So it's the same way. You just, it's so fickle. You never know who's going to buy into your book or love your book, or, you know, we've all probably heard of many stories, like The Help, for example. The author pitched her book to 60 publishers who rejected it and said nobody wants to read a book about the 60s and the civil rights movement and all of this stuff. We've had it with that topic. But, you know, publisher number 61 said, I love it. I see the value in this manuscript, and I see it on the screen. And so you just never, ever know who's going to fall in love with your book, and tenacity is a big part of it. So I would, kind of reeling back to what you asked me, is that there are no guarantees. And when companies say to you, if you pay this much money for the package, you know, you're going to be a best-selling author, or you're going to be very, very visible for Random House, because Random House is, you know, our big boss. And when they see books that are doing well, they might give you a contract. I mean, these kinds of empty promises that really never come to fruition. In fact, statistics were just published. It was like 0.02% of something of authors ever actually got a publishing deal when these kinds of things have been promised. So,
ouch.
You asked me about the pitfalls of these kinds of agreements, and that is a big one. And another one that I do want to mention that I didn't get to mention last time is that when you pay for all of these services to be done by a company, when I say services, I talk about your, you know, your cover design and your interior layout, you no longer own those designs. I mean, they own them because they did them for you. And so if you decided to leave that company and say, you know what, I think I'm going to publish myself. I'm going to take all my files. I'm going to go to Ingram, for example, and I'm going to upload all my files to their platform, and I'm just going to break away from this model, and I'm going to do my own thing. Well, guess what? You paid for all that work to be done, but they own the files, not you. So you
even
would have
the manuscript?
The manuscript
or,
you
or
own.
Or just
yes.
The artwork. Okay.
But the artwork itself, the actual interior layout, doesn't belong to you, so you can't just take those files and upload them to a platform of your choice. You would have to pay to have all of that work done all over again. And so, for example, when I work with my clients and I write up contracts, you know, I make it very clear that everything belongs to my author. Once they've paid me for the work, it all belongs to the author. So if I design a cover, I do an interior layout, they get all of their files at the end. And if they decide that they want to go to, you know, a third platform or a different, just a different platform altogether from what we've done together, those files belong to them. They're not looking around for someone to redo them and having to pay for them all over again. So loopholes like that in contracts, I imagine, I haven't seen them, but I imagine contracts with these companies are probably really hard to follow. There's a lot of legalese that are hard to catch, and those are things that people just don't realize. I don't think they make it very clear And so that's another nightmare that some people run into, is they find themselves in a little deep and they say, oh my gosh, this isn't what I thought. This isn't, they're not, you know, producing the manuscript I wanted. The editing is terrible and I don't have a choice in the matter. I want to leave. And then they can't take the work that they've already paid for with them. They have to pay for it all over again. So I don't
that's
mean to harp
terrible.
On this. I don't mean to take
it's
up
important.
All of our time with it. But it
it's,
is
it's
such
very
an
important,
important
to, for people to know, yeah.
It really is. And I think just being aware of what to look for.
Right.
Basically, anytime they say, you know, you're going to be a bestseller or you have a chance of being published by a big publisher if you go with us, or, you know, anything that sounds too good to be true usually is. So, you know,
well,
just be careful.
Right. If it's, if your spidey sense is going off and it sounds like they're trying to push off a used car on you, run.
Yes. Run fast.
Just run.
That's the direction. Yes. As I said,
okay,
they very hard to court authors, so just be aware.
I can imagine. Listen, I have a quick question that popped up while you were talking, and this goes back to when you were saying something about movie rights. You know, when you're talking about the movie that went to the 61st publisher. So my question that popped into my head is, once a book is self-published, can it still be picked up at some point by a big publishing company?
Yes,
I mean,
absolutely.
Just because you self-published it doesn't mean that that's where it stays forever and ever, amen, right?
No, and this is the interesting thing that has happened, especially over the last couple of years, as print-on-demand has become such a great option for authors. Basically, what has happened is big publishing houses have realized, hey, print-on-demand is this new great option. Authors are jumping into it. They're paying for all of their editing and their design and all of that. How wonderful. And then they're putting their books out there. Great. And then we get to sit back and watch and see how they do. Now, when I say this, what I'm saying is, if you do, as an author, you know, go through all of the proper channels of producing your book with excellence, and I'm talking about hiring professional editors and designers and all of that, and you have built a strong platform, once again, harkening back to what we were just talking about, that you really built a connection with an audience who's interested in what you're writing about, whether it's fiction or nonfiction, but building that relationship. And so you are actually maybe hitting the top 10 list on Amazon in your particular niche market or your broad genre. There are big publishing companies who are looking at that and thinking, hey, who is this person?
Mm-hmm.
Looking at who the publisher is. And if it's not one of the big five or a small house they recognize, you know, they may conjecture that it's a self-pub author. Let's seek this person out, because they've obviously done all their homework. They've done a great job. They've already spent all the money, so let's offer them a contract now that they've done all the hard work and they're actually selling lots of books. We already basically have a guaranteed either bestseller or potential bestseller on our hands. So as you can imagine, a publishing house, you know, publishing is very risky. It's a very risky business, and that's why advances to authors are very small and royalties are very low, because publishing houses invest thousands of dollars in producing a book of excellence, and then they don't really know how well it's going to do. And obviously, they only take on manuscripts that they think have, you know, great potential for sales. Otherwise, they wouldn't take them on. But the reality is they don't always know. Just like some films, you know, people spend $10 million on a film they think will be a blockbuster, and it's a flop. And you just can't figure out why. And so it's the same kind of situation. And so when publishing houses are sort of given a gift of seeing a book that's already a best-selling book and nobody else has scooped it up, those are the kinds of situations where contracts are sometimes offered to self-publishing authors. And sometimes it's a great option, and sometimes the self-publishing author has done really well for themselves and is already making much higher royalties than they would with the publishing house. And so, you know, you really have to weigh, is it a good decision to go with them, or is it better to stay on my own? But yes, it definitely happens, and it's happening more and more and more.
Well, and that makes perfect sense, Stacey, because, I mean, if they are able to sit back, kind of watch where you're going with this book, and we talked about social proof in our last chat, when mm-hmm. authors need to build their own platforms these days, it's pretty much mandatory, isn't it? They need to be on
yes.
Facebook, on LinkedIn, on Twitter. They need to be, you know, speaking. Most of the authors that I know are also public professional speakers, and they sell a lot of books because people are getting to know them, like them, and trust them. I mean, Bob Berg is excellent at that, Larry Wingate, Mark Sanborn. I can reel off many, many names of people who are authors and speakers and are hugely successful because they have built up that know, like, and trust factor over time, and people understand who they are. Joe Calloway's got a great book. There are just so many people who are out there in a big, big way interacting with their audience. They're not just sitting in their little ivory tower waiting for, you know, somebody to say, okay, you're going on a book tour today. Those don't even happen anymore, I don't
yeah.
think. Things have really, really changed, and social media, I think, is the biggest, and I think it's one of the most important things that people need to factor into their model.
Oh, absolutely. And as you said, that social proof is so crucial because
yeah.
when there is proof, as in book sales, and the book is doing well, and the book has been self-published, that's just proof that the author has done an incredible job. And even traditional publishers will not even consider a manuscript unless you give some social proof. You know, who
mm-hmm.
is your audience? How have you made a connection with that audience? How many people are on your list that, you know, might be potential customers for you? Traditional publishers never really used to ask those questions. They just found a manuscript they loved and they believed in it, and they put it out into the world, and there was no social media. There weren't websites. You know, that this is a whole different age, and so now that all of these technical gifts have been bestowed upon us, whether, you know, sometimes they're gifts and sometimes they're curses, depending on how much time of your life they eat up. But nonetheless, that's what traditional publishers are looking for, especially with first-time authors. And so if you don't have that, it's not just a self-publishing thing. It's a traditional publishing thing that you have to have as well. So I'm really glad that you brought that up again.
It's really important, I think. And, you know, people, I think, are getting a little bit tired of hearing about social media. Listen, if you have any kind of business, you have any kind of a message, you need to build that platform. And that means you need to choose the, you know, top 3 or 4 or 5 and work them. You know, get out there, be on Facebook and be on Twitter and interact. I think the biggest thing that people don't understand about social media, and I know you've heard this, I've heard it all the time, oh, I don't want to just talk about me. Well, good, because you don't want to talk about you. You want to establish a dialogue. You want to be a resource. You want to, you know, send people to your friends' books. I mean, it's never all about you. It's about what your audience needs to know. How can you help them? How can you be of service to them? And once people understand that about social media, they're like, oh, okay, that makes sense. But don't be afraid of social media to promote your book, because you'll only promote your book once in a great while. The rest of the time, you're letting people get to know you and why they really want to follow you around.
You're so right, and that is very important. And one of the things we touched on in the last show was just
mm-hmm.
how important it is to make that connection, because it's all about the trust and the likability and
it
being
is.
Helpful and shifting your mindset from selling to sharing, because it's really
mm-hmm.
just about sharing, and not sharing buy my book, but sharing great information to help people on whatever their path may be, whether it's, you know, food or health or whatever.
And I always tell people, be a resource. But I have another quick, I'm scribbling while you're talking. I'm going, ooh, I have questions. Can you see my hand up there?
Yes.
Like, oh, me, come on, me. Okay, I see this a lot, because we were talking earlier about, you know, some of these authors that are really, I mean, they're creating great platforms. I download a lot of free Kindle books. I love my Kindle. Had to be talked into it, but once I got into it, it's like, oh. But here's mm-hmm. the thing. When you end a book, they want you to go tweet about it. They want you to go on Amazon and write a review about it. They invite you to go to their Facebook author page. The ones who are doing it right are very, very active, at least on their Kindle manuscripts, about getting you to interact with them. Some even have, you know, like a book club thing in the back. Say, okay, well, this, you know, you can use these questions for your book club, which I think is brilliant. Mm-hmm. But here's the thing. I'm seeing, and this confuses me, so I'm sure that this is going to come up at some point. What is the difference between self-publishing and indie publishers, or is there a difference?
Well, there's kind of a fine line there. Some people will talk about independent publishing and look at it more as maybe working with a very small publishing press or a partnership press, like She Writes Press, for example, is what's called a partnership press. Now, you do pay them for the editorial and design services, but they function as a traditional small press where they vet every manuscript. You have to submit, they have to accept it, they have to really believe that you have something great. And then they have a huge network that they can help market your book to. And so you do have the kind of the power of them behind you, and they've built themselves up quite well over the last few years. So that, you know, could be called independent publishing. I think a lot of people look at self-publishing as meaning DIY. And this is a huge misnomer because the word self is in it, it's very easy to think, oh, that means I have to do everything myself. And you brought this up yourself. You said, well, gosh, I feel like I should be able to do everything.
Yeah,
I'm a web developer.
I
do all kinds of things in my own business. I'm a one-stop shop for my own customers. So, you know, why can't I just translate all of those skills into being an editor and a designer? And, you know, I have some skills in some of these areas, or even if I don't, There seem to be ways that I can do these things in a template. So why can't I just do it all myself? And
that
really
is the conversation I had with myself. And then I realized that it was a complete new career for me, and I went, nope, I don't have the energy or the time. It literally would have been a career change for me. I mean, it's that intense, and I would much rather turn it over to the experts. I mean, I know when I'm licked, I do.
Well, I actually came up with an analogy, that an illustration that I think will really help people understand why DIY and self-publishing are not one and the same. So can I share that with you real quick?
Yes, please. That was my next question.
Okay, great. So I want you to think about building a house. Let's say that you are thinking about your dream house, and you have an idea of your floor plan, and you sketch it out on paper, but the likelihood that you're also a professional architect is probably pretty slim. But, you know, no problem. Sketch it out, and then you would obviously, you know, have the blueprint actually done by a professional architect, because you're not going to give a sketch to a general contractor and say, this is the house I want, right? Because blueprints are very specific. You have to be trained to create one. So beyond that, you probably wouldn't also attempt to build your house yourself from top to bottom, because, again, you probably aren't a professional plumber, a professional electrician, or a general contractor, and you clearly want your house to be built well and to stand the test of time. And so it makes sense that, you know, even if you sketch it out, that you're going to then turn it over to professionals to build. Now let's just look at the scenario that even if you were trained in all of these fields, you're an architect, a plumber, an electrician, and a contractor, which, you know, is extremely rare, you would still need to bring in an inspector to ensure that everything was done properly, not to mention that you would probably need a crew of people to help you. And so the reason why I create this analogy is because a book is very much the same. You know, even though it's not a structure that you're going to live in, it is still an entity that you want to be excellent and that you want to stand the test of time. And so, for an example, I am actually one of those rare people who's a writer, a professional editor, a book designer, and a publishing expert. So technically, I could perform all of these different phases of my book production process. But guess what? I would still never produce my book without my inspector, or rather my editor. I would still hire a professional editor. Why? Because I'm too close to see anything that I've missed. And basically, as writers, we just overlook a lot of things. It's very difficult. And I write fiction, so if there's a hole in a plot or there's not a great character development somewhere, I, in my mind, because I've been living with these characters for so long, I think they're perfectly wonderful. But, an editor is going to come in and say, hey, you know, you've got this person over here, and they're kind of just sitting over here, and I think you need to do more. You need to give them, you know, something else to do or something else to say that's important or whatever it might be. So if you think about it, you know, a book and a house are actually very similar. By the same token, you wouldn't, for example, you know, spend a lot of money on all of the interior aspects of your house and then not paint the outside and not landscape and leave it looking really shabby, right? Because if somebody walked by that house, they would assume that the entire inside probably looks just as shabby.
Right.
You know, that's the first impression they have. The same thing happens with a book. If you spend a lot of money on a professional editor and you get the content really great, but then you cut corners on the cover design, for example, that's the first thing people see. They're going to assume that if your cover doesn't look professional, then the inside must not be. It's just human nature that we make these assumptions. And at the same time, you know, you wouldn't fully landscape a shabbily built house, you know, with poor plumbing and you know, maybe not so great interior design, but you have this beautiful garden and you have all these details on the outside, and someone walks in and says, hey, you know, I was expecting something so much better. And so it's the same thing with a book. Again, if you spend a lot of money on a cover, but you don't spend a lot of money, or the appropriate amount of money, I should say, on editing and layout, then your potential reader is going to be lured by a cover and then be disappointed by the interior. And you don't want that. So that's why all of the elements are so important. And that's why DIY and self-publishing are not one and the same, because it's very rare that someone would be, you know, a professional writer, or not even a professional writer, but a writer, you know, trying to put out a great book, and then also have the expertise in design and editing and publishing and all of those things. It's just not supposed to be something that everybody knows how to do. I'm very blessed, and I've spent, you know, I've obviously spent time honing my skills to be able to be this person for my clients, but that's not what every writer is supposed to be doing. And so to beat yourself up or think that you are somehow inferior or why can't I do all this myself, that's crazy talk. You don't need to be doing that to yourself, because just think about the house. Think about building a house and think, well, of course I would hire a plumber. Of course I would hire an electrician. I want all these things to be done well because these aren't my fields of expertise. And it's the same with a book.
And that's a perfect analogy, because, I mean, these people who are in the trades, they have done what you and I have done. They've gotten the education. They know what they're doing. You know, they're certified or whatever it is. I mean, you can count on them to do it properly and quickly. But if you're trying to do it yourself, and people worry about the money, you know, oh, I'm going to pay so much money for this. But here's the thing. When you try to do a lot of this yourself, you're spending so much more than you would in times of hours and actually the cost just correcting your mistakes than you would have had you turned it over to a professional. And it's hard to understand, I'm going to have to spend $5,000 or $6,000. I guarantee you're going to spend more than that if you try to do it on your own and make a big mess of it.
Yes, and I think you have to think about what is the cost of doing it poorly. The cost of doing it poorly is much worse. You're talking about diminished credibility. You're talking about poor reviews. Writers, you know, sending you nasty little notes, and that happens. You know, why did you put this book out when it wasn't edited, when you didn't, you know, you didn't deliver on what the title said you were going to deliver on? I mean, all these kinds of things happen. And so it's very important to remember that it does no one any good to publish a book that's not ready, you know, that's not properly structured and developed, or that has quality design or price point issues. It does absolutely no good for anybody. It does not help the reader, it doesn't help the literary community, and it certainly doesn't help you as a writer. So the best thing to do is to do it right the first time. I want to interject here because you brought this up, and this is really important. I've worked with two or three authors who did a DIY first book and then realized, oh, my gosh, I did everything wrong. And then they found me, and they said, will you look at my original book? And will you redo it? Can I pay you to do it right? And, you know, the books had every single earmark of DIY. No professional editing, horrible design, all of the broken rules of interior layout. Page headers on blank pages, page numbers on blank pages.
I've seen that. It's like, really?
Yeah, it's crazy. And then you've got, the table of contents starting on a left-facing page when it has to start on a right-facing page. These are the types of conventions I'm talking about that you have to know as a professional layout artist for books. And so when you don't know those things and you're just going, you're just going with what you think is fine. You're in a Word program and you set a margin for your book and you just sort of let it all flow. You're not realizing this needs to be a blank page. This needs to be a right-facing page. This can't have a header on it. Things like that. You're just showing that you absolutely had no idea what you were doing. And as you say, you can open Kindle books and you know right away. Sometimes you're just appalled by what you see and thank goodness you got the book for free. You didn't pay for it. But this happens. And so, I've had authors come to me for the second time around. And the problem is, it's fine. I'm happy to redo it. But the problem is that a standard book is really hard to get off Amazon. Once your book is on Amazon, you can't just sort of remove it.
And, I didn't even think of that. I'm glad you brought that up because I hadn't even thought down that far down the road.
Yes. And so you've got these horrible covers with terrible interiors and, they've got the look inside the book feature that are highly embarrassing. And that book is sitting next to the brand new book, but you can't get the old one off of Amazon because, first of all, there's just not really a delete button. even when you self-publish and you go into your self-publishing platform like CreateSpace and you delete that file, which you can do, you can delete that book file, it's still on Amazon. And what happens is if someone buys your book, however bad it might be, they can then try to sell it on Amazon as a used book forever and charge crazy prices for it. And it's silly. Nobody's ever going to buy it, but it happened to one of my authors. Their terrible first version was listed on Amazon for $67 or something from some seller of used books. And they were so embarrassed by it, but see, the damage had been done. Yes, they came to me. Yes, we redid the book completely, and they have a great book now, but that first book is sort of stuck there for all time, and there was nothing they could do about it. They tried to call Amazon. They tried everything, and nothing. There was nothing they could do about it. So this is another cautionary tale about don't just jump in by yourself and think you're supposed to do everything yourself and wing it, and then, find out later that I wish I would have saved the money, taken my time, hired professionals, done it right. Because, unfortunately, with books, your book can get stuck on Amazon forever. You don't want that to happen when it's an embarrassing book.
I am so glad you brought that up. I honestly had not thought of that. I think that's very, very important. And that explains, now that you're saying that, that explains why I see some of these goofy-looking books at these insane prices in paperback. And all I can think is, what's the deal? Now I'm thinking, okay, I think I kind of get it now.
Yeah, so it's a strange web of people who buy these books and then think that they're going to sell them down the line. Like if they become out of print, I think they think that they'll have this edge. They'll have these weird out-of-print books that they can sell for high prices, not realizing that the books are quite terrible and who would be buying them anyway. Who knows why these things occur? I think people have strange
people have odd ideas
sometimes. But yes.
Well, let's go back to the very, very beginning, because one of the big questions that I've been wanting to ask you is, what is the biggest mistakes that writers make before they start writing, before they get into the do-it-yourself or the indie publishing or trying to send a query letter? What is the biggest mistake they make straight out of the chute before publishing?
There's kind of a handful, and I'd like to share all of them because I think they're all vital for writers to know. One is jumping into writing a book just because you know something about the subject matter. And that's the ego. That's the writer's ego. This is my profession. I'm really good at it. I'm going to write a book about it.
My first book. Shoot, I don't want to talk to you anymore. You just broke my heart.
No, don't let me break your heart. This can work. This can work as long as you are aware of what's already out there in your genre. Because if you just if you just write the book that you want to write, now we're talking about nonfiction. I should make that very clear. We're talking about nonfiction where there are, you know, specific genres and there are some very broad genres and very niche markets. So if you just jump in and write the book you want to write, you can very easily find out after you've spent all the time and money, somebody already wrote that book. And they maybe even wrote it better than you. And so if you had just done some homework and you figured out, okay, I want to write on this topic, and let's face it, it's very hard to write on a brand new topic no one's ever written about. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's really not the goal. The goal is to put a book into the marketplace that stands out with some degree of uniqueness. So if you want to write a book about raw food and there are already 30 to 50 books out there about eating raw, you need to look at those books. You know, how are they presented? What is the focus? Are they just recipes? Do they talk about how to change from, you know, traditional eating to raw eating? You know, what is it? Is it a daily practice? So, you know, by looking at other books in your genre, that's how you determine how yours can stand out and be different, because that's how you market a book. You market a book based on how it's going to fill a gap in your genre. And so people who just jump in to write the book, and they're not thinking about the audience, really, and they're not thinking about what's already out there, it can very well be doomed from the start because they're really writing from an ego place. They're not writing from a what is going to benefit the reader place, and that is a huge mistake.
I think that is something very important. Can you repeat that? Because I think it's important enough to be said again.
Yes. A lot of writers jump into writing from an ego place. I know about this topic, so I can write on it, instead of writing from a place of how will this book benefit the reader. And that is the place where every writer needs to be. Now, fiction is a little different. I mean, obviously, nonfiction and fiction have a different approach and a different audience, but overall, you want to be thinking about how are you going to benefit the reader, entertain the reader, whatever your particular goal is. So stay away from the ego place. I'm going to talk about that a little bit more in a second when I get to the big one. Another mistake is not approaching writing as an art and a craft that commands honing over time. I mean, there's the skill of writing, you know, putting a pencil to paper and actually writing words, there's a whole other approach to writing as a craft. And so it's important that people know if they want to write a book that, you know, it's not necessarily crucial that you are a grammar nerd like me or that you, you know, are really, I don't know, like an expert, for example, in mechanics, because I know some fabulous storytellers who've written incredible novels, and they're terrible writers in terms of mechanics. They say their editors absolutely saved their books. And they feel bad for their editors as well. I actually know a few authors who say, I can't spell, and I don't know grammar, and I don't know what a comma, where a comma belongs or a semicolon belongs. I don't get any of it. I just know how to write a really great story, and my editor deals with all the things I can't do well. So that's another thing. But, you know, it is important to think about writing as a craft and an art that you do study and you hone over time. You know, it's good to take seminars and workshops and to read books, great books about writing. They're very, very helpful. And so, you know, again, that jumping in without thinking is a real detriment to a lot of people. Another thing I want to caution about is falling, again, for any scheme that promises a book using the adjectives fast, easy, or cheap. Those are three words that should never be applied to a book. And I think about that with the house analogy, too. I think, oh, my gosh, you know, build your house fast, easy, and cheap. Okay, that just scares me, you know, and it should scare you if you hear, you know, you can do a book fast, easy, or cheap. Now, I'm talking about print books. E-books, you can do more quickly. You know, there's not as much design work going on in there. I mean, there can be, but there are definitely ways you can get ebooks up quicker and less, more inexpensively than a print book. But just kind of remember those words and stay away from them. Another big one is believing that you should just write the book first and then figure out how to sell it. It's really the other way around. You want to be thinking about who you're going to be selling it to, who needs this book, who's going to be helped by this book, who will be inspired, who will be entertained, and then write the book, because it has to be all about the audience, about the reader. What are the reader's needs? What are their fears? What are their goals? What problems are they trying to solve? That's the person you want to be. Again, you don't want to write from an ego place. You want to write from a how can I benefit my reader place.
Mm-hmm. And that makes perfect sense to me.
Good, because it's a really important one. And then not realizing that you do truly need a substantial budget. To produce a print book of any level of credibility and excellence from cover to cover, you do need to have a substantial budget. Not a $10,000 budget, but, you know, as I said in the last call, you know, $3,000 to $6,000 with $4,000 to $5,000 being a sweet spot for most, you know, average-length books. And of course, it depends on a lot of factors. The level of the writing, how much editing it needs, how complex the layout might be, how many cover designs you end up wanting, you know, all those kinds of things, or cover concepts, I should say, you end up asking the designer to do before you choose, all of those kinds of things. But I want to end with a big one, and we kind of touched on it already, but it's being directed by the wrong why. So when you think about writing a book, the first question you need to ask is why? Why do I want to write this book? And a lot of common answers to that are what will benefit me as a writer. That's common, such as, well, I've always wanted to be a published author. That's why I want to write a book. I want to put author after my name on social media, or I want to have a book to sell at events. I want to make money from a book, or I want my credentials in my field to be increased. Those are all, you know, typical answers to why do I want to write a book, but I think the important thing to think about is those are all byproducts of producing a book of excellence. They should not be the reason you're actually writing the book. So there are common whys, but then you have necessary whys, and those are the whys that are going to benefit the reader. So what I would say is I want you to think about shifting your mindset of why I want to write a book to things like, I want to offer real value to the reader. I want to fill a gap in my book's genre. I want to write content that will be worth the investment of professional editing, design, and marketing. And think about it. If you're writing poor content, you're not going to want to invest that much money in its presentation because you're not even thinking it's worth it. So if you're really spending time to write excellent content, it's going to be worth the investment of making the presentation.
Right.
I know my target audience will benefit from this book. I want to teach, inspire, entertain, and or move the reader to action in a positive way. And ultimately, I want to create a true gift for my reader that they'll be happy to receive. A book should really be a gift. And so when you stop thinking about, I want to have author next to my name on social media, I want to make money, I want to have a book to sell, and you are thinking about what your reader needs, that's when you switch from the writer's mindset to the publisher's mindset. And being in a publisher's mindset is what you need to be in, because Random House isn't going, oh, we want to publish this for you because we want you to have this book to sell because you're a speaker, or we want you to be a published author after all. No. They're saying, we want to publish this book because we see that it's filling a place in your niche market. We see that it's a value to a reader. We see it's presenting a brand new, exciting idea. You know, those are the things that they're thinking about. So when you self-publish, you really have to switch from a writer's mindset to a publisher's mindset. And when you do that, it will shift the whole trajectory of your book. Your why is the core of everything you're doing as a writer. And when you're focused on the reader and not on yourself as a writer, that is when you will produce content that is excellent. And that's when you produce the kinds of books that sell and that are marketable and that are easier to market, because you know exactly who your audience is, you know what their fears and goals and dreams are, the problems they're trying to solve, and you are presenting them with a gift to fulfill those goals or dreams or solve those problems. And so that's when a writer really shifts into being an author who's published with excellence.
I'm just sitting here in awe. I mean, you just described how I look at books. To me, books are a gift. I mean, I've got books that I started reading. There's one, this is an old Reader's Digest book that my parents had books all over the house. I would sit at the age of three and open up books. I just taught myself to read. I was reading Guy de Maupassant. I was reading, you know, things that I had no idea that what most of it was even about when I was 10 or 11. But one of my all-time favorite books my entire life has been Merry Christmas, Mr. Baxter. Long out of print. It's an old Reader's Digest book. I think it was written in the 50s, perhaps. It was an old book when my parents had it. I swiped it when I left home. I put it in my suitcase and left with it. And every year, and I finally fessed up to my mom, I've got it. I'll loan it to you, but you can't have it back. But every year, it is one of my Christmas traditions to break out this old Reader's Digest book very carefully because it's falling apart and sit down in front of the fireplace and read Merry Christmas, Mr. Baxter. It crawled into my heart when I was about 5 years old, and it has been with me ever since. There are books like that that are just, as you said so beautifully, they're a gift.
And, exactly.
You know, I don't know what this man was thinking when he wrote it, but it's just, it's the most beautiful story. And there are books that I go back to, and I know you do, and those of us who are voracious readers, there are always going to be books that we go back to time and time and time again. Because we're going to read them differently at different points in of our life. We're going to pick up different tips or advice or wisdom or, you know, that lightning bolt that goes, ah, there it is. It's right there when I need it. And these books across the board are incredibly well written. There's no mistakes. They're just beautiful. And so you're able to read the book, I guess. Excuse me, is what I'm saying is you're able to immerse yourself in it and not be distracted by goofy mistakes, because those goofy mistakes will stop me. I don't know about you, but they just stop me cold. And after a while, if I've seen too many of them, the book just goes. I can't continue. And sometimes I think that's a shame because there might be something in there for me, but I just can't do it.
I know, and you're so right about that. And that can totally be avoided when you're a self-publishing author by hiring a great mm-hmm. professional editor. And oh my gosh, I can't believe our time is up.
I know, we do this every single time.
Because I really do want to offer some red flags to heed when you're looking for professionals, because I think that's a question that's probably swimming around in people's minds. It's like, okay, I have to avoid these you know, predatory self-publishing companies, and so then what am I supposed to do if I'm supposed to have all these professionals on a team, or, you know, how am I supposed to figure out who's decent and who's not?
Right.
And I didn't even get to talk about that. But
well, we are still. I mean, Stacey, if you've got a few minutes, if you don't think if it's something we need to bring you back for a third edition, I'm happy to do that. If it's something you think you can cover, we're still recording. We're not streaming, but we're recording still. So you tell me what you want. If you think it's enough information that we can make another show around it, I would love to do that.
Well, to be honest, I think we should, because it's such a big topic. You know, yes, I offer all of these services as a mm-hmm. as a single trust partner, but not everybody's going to work with me, and I know that.
Right.
And you know, I think it's important really for people to know what they should be looking for. What kinds of questions should they be asking? I think, you know, as you were saying, when you're overwhelmed by a process, you don't know what kinds of questions you should be asking, and so. One of the things that I really would like to share with your listeners is what kinds of things to look for that are red flags and what kinds of questions you should be asking. And I think we could probably build a whole show around that, because I want to focus on editing as one entity
right.
and on cover and interior design as another entity, because as I said,
most excellent.
Business actually only do one or the other. They do one thing. Some people do cover mm-hmm. and interior, but they're not necessarily editors and vice versa and all that. So I think, you know, there are people who are assembling a team of people to help them produce their book, and they each have their own professional expertise. And so when you're looking for these people, it's really important to know what a red flag would be. And also the kinds of questions you should be asking, because if you know certain things aren't resonating with you, that's when you need to think, okay, let me talk to somebody else, let me make a comparison, So if you are willing to have me back a third time, I would be thrilled to come back because I
absolutely
think that's a topic that is crucial, and I have a feeling that a lot of people listening are thinking, well, I'm glad that I know some of these things to avoid, but I don't really know everything to avoid if I'm looking for individual contractors, and I'm not really sure what I should be looking for, and I think that's a big hole that we're presenting should fill if we can.
And I would love to. And another thing, and we haven't talked about this, but it's also important to find, excuse me, my voice is shot today. It's also important to have a book website, and we haven't talked about that, I don't think, but I work with a lot of authors and speakers, and it's important to get the name of your book, the URL of your book, once you're out of the working title, and you actually have the book title, and start promoting your book on there. I think it's really important, so we could certainly cover that as well. I would love to bring you back, because this is such a huge topic, and I think it's so important for people to know what their choices are, you know, where they can kind of do it themselves, where they need assistance, just so that they know where the minefield is. So, yeah, let's do a third
and
maybe fourth if we have to, but we need to get it all out there. It's a huge topic one that I'm very passionate about, so.
Well, I appreciate that, and I would like to be able to give people some resources and, you know, where to find providers and where are good places to go to find either providers or, you know, web professionals like you, and, you know, being able to have a little bit of a resource guide I think is very helpful as well. So, yes, I would be thrilled to come back and very honored.
Okay.
And so we'll figure that out.
Great.
But yeah, I think today we did talk about a lot of important things, and I'm so glad that we were able to do that. But I know it seems like it never ends. There's so much
I know. Well, and that's just it. It's a big, big topic, and more people are going into writing their own books. I mean, you're seeing Kindle challenges all over the place. It's a big, big topic on social media, as it should be. But I think that people need to do their due diligence, listen to people like you, go follow other people who are talking about the same topics, and then make really informed decisions. Number one, so their book isn't a piece of junk. Number two, so they're not heartbroken over the money that they spent. And number three, so that when they do get it published, however they do it, that they're so proud of it that they can just do magical things with it. And that's where you come in. So definitely I want you to come back for a third and possibly fourth episode, because this needs to be a series, I think.
Yes, we now have a series. We have two,
like two,
and now we're working on three, so now we're officially becoming a series.
That's right.
I love it. I love it.
Well listen,
I thank you.
Oh, listen, thank you so much for being with me here today. You are a great guest, and you always share so much great information. I know the audience is going, oh, wow. And I think we probably need to create a handout on some of this as well. But anyway, I will get in touch with you. We'll set up another show and then possibly a fourth if we need. And we're going to do whatever we can to get this information to people because they need it.
Oh, I'm so happy to be part of it. And thank you so much for putting such an emphasis on the importance of sharing this with people. I do think that we can definitely help guide people in the right direction, and that's the goal of my business, and I know the goal of yours in doing the show and all the work that you do. So I'm looking forward to coming back, most definitely.
No, definitely. And I love that, you know, you understand, and I do this too with my web clients. I cannot serve everybody. I mean, I've got a lot of clients, but there are people who will come to me or maybe not come to me, but they're watching, and they just need information. They need information to make decisions. And I love that you're willing to share that as an entrepreneur and, you know, as a gracious spirit, that you're willing to share information with people who may not work with you directly, but they're certainly going to learn from you, and that's what it's really all about.
You're absolutely right, and thank you for saying that, because that's definitely my goal, is to help people as much as I can. If I end up getting to work with an author, then, you know, icing on the cake. But it's really about putting out the best information we can to help people make informed decisions and end up, as you said, so beautifully with that book in hand that they are so proud of. And I say that to every author. I promise you, and I can keep this promise, that at the end of our partnership, you will have a book in your hand that you are so proud of. You're over the moon. You're in love with it, and you can't wait to share it with the world. And that's how it should be.
Exactly. I mean, to me, a book is a work of art. If it's done, if it's coming from your heart, it should be a work of art, and it should be in people's hands, whether it's an e-book, whether it's a PDF, whatever it is. You're telling your story, and I think this is why, and we didn't touch on this, and we can in the next episode, but I think this is why self-help books are what, number one, as far as genres go, because people really do want to help other people, and people really do want to learn from other people. So to me, that's the genesis of a good book is, as you said, how is the end user, what are they going to get from it? It's not about you. I can write about the virtual assistance industry all day long, but unless I'm touching your heart, there's not much point. Unless I'm giving you really good, actionable tips and advice that you go, oh, well, that makes sense. I'm not going to write anything that's just going to be do this, do this, don't do that. Doesn't make sense to me.
No, and if I may just quickly give a little shout-out to Dr. Patricia Thompson, who was your guest last week. She's actually one of my clients. Yes, I did her book with her, The Consummate Leader. And one of the things I was so proud of her for from the get-go was, you know, I see this book that's presented to me, this book idea, and it's on leadership. And we all know that there are a multitude of books out there on leadership. So how do you write a book on leadership that's different? And right in her introduction, and she actually said this on the show because you asked her, why did you write this book? And I just wanted to bring some attention back to what she said because I was so impressed by this, and this is such an important thing for writers to do, is she said, a lot of my clients would ask me for good books I should read to help myself. You know, she's a corporate psychologist, so she was getting all of these clients who wanted some resources. And she said, I found myself knowing, well, here's a great book for delegation, here's a great book for this, for that, but not one book seemed to bring them all together. Mm-hmm. And she really did her homework. She was out there. She was buying books and reading books and knowing what was out there and sharing books with her clients. And she said, you know, I just finally decided maybe I'm the one who's supposed to write it. And she had the experience and the expertise to do so, but she really made sure that she was writing a book that was different in her niche market. And so there's a book on leadership out there now that incorporates spirituality and self-awareness and, you know, all of the different things about coaching and developing and teamwork and all of those things. And so I'm so proud of the book that I was even involved in it. I just absolutely love it. And I just think she's a great example of a writer who wrote from the place of how can I help the reader with what I know and bring something into the marketplace that is different from what's already out there.
Well, she actually inspired me because, as I told her, you know, I opened up my Word document and I wrote the epic first blank page.
I loved that.
It was
that
gorgeous. And I looked at it for a long time and went, oh, you're pretty. I got to go. This is not working. But she actually inspired me because I have so much to share about my industries, both of them, and the business side of it, the leadership side of it, the coaching, the mentoring. I can talk about the virtual assistance industry all day long, but I wasn't sure how to. And when she explained it in just those few short sentences, I went, well, there it is. There it is. She explained to me why I needed to write my book and where I would come from with it. So I need to call her and tell her thank you. I think I chatted with her after the show, but I think I was in shock and I completely, you know, forgot to say thank you. So I need to send her a card and tell her that she really changed my attitude or my awareness. Not my attitude. The attitude's still there, but my awareness of just how I want people to receive this book when I get it written.
Yes, I think she was the epitome of what a good writer does. When you're writing nonfiction and you have expertise field or multiple fields or multiple elements of one field, that it's about serving the reader.
Right.
And that's where she
came
from, the entire book from start to finish. And I know you downloaded her book and
you
were
reading
it. But that's what she does from start to finish, and that's what really all of my authors have done start to finish. And if they weren't able to do that on their own, I've been able to help them do that in the best possible way with them as a partner. because that's what it's all about. It's who's the book going to be picked up and devoured and loved by? Well, that's the reader.
Exactly. Well, I am so delighted to have you come back soon because we're going to explore this topic from all angles. We're going to give people a lot of information so they can make informed decisions and so they can sit down and say, okay, I'm going to start writing. This is how I might want to publish. You know, I may change that down the road, but at least I have some how-to steps. And that's really, I think, what we've been trying to do is, you know, give you, our audience, the information about why all of these things are done. But then we're going to, I think, go deeper, Stacey, and give them the how-tos and the resources, if that's okay with you.
Absolutely. I'm very happy to do that.
Okay. Great. Well, listen, we are a little bit over, but it's been fascinating chatting with you. And the show will be available for download in about an hour, and you can also find us in iTunes. Just type in our names, Denise Griffiths and Stacey Aronson, and I will see you next week. Stacey, thank you so much. You are a joy.
Oh, thank you. Always a pleasure to speak with you, Denise.
Thank you.
You can find Denise Griffiths at yourofficeontheweb.com or at gottagovirtualnow.com. Thank you for joining us on your Partner in Success Radio.